Bone-chilling greetings, everyone. The tunes are courtesy of the amazing Bobby Mackey, and I'm your host, Tessa Morrow.
Now today it's a different place, all the same with a new face, with strange mysteries hanging in the air. People in their sane minds swear they see you today. Are you looking for the love they took away? Everyone knows that you couldn't bear the pain, so you took your life in the pouring rain.
Thanks for stopping by and making Paranormal Prowlers Podcast part of your morning, day, night, graveyard shift, whenever you listen and wherever you are listening from mountaintop to tiny village, to tropical island, and everything in between. It's greatly appreciated.
Round of applause. This week's city shout-out goes to
Waltham Forest, England, Akron, Colorado, Cumming, Georgia, Burbank, Illinois, McLaney, Florida, and Mendham, New Jersey. Happy New Year to everyone. 2025 was kind of a crazy year with hints of kick-ass adventures, of course, but really praying that this year, 2026, is better for everybody. One thing that I did just a couple days after Christmas, I have these scarves that I make, and they just had been sitting around and it was bugging me. I was like, I want somebody to enjoy them, right? So for a long time now, I had been wanting to go to the veterans home. And so I go there and I introduce myself and just say, hey, look, I'm not trying to sell these. I just want to give these to people. I love our veterans. I respect them. I'm the kind of person who comes up and tries to give them a hug and say, thank you for your service. I just, they're precious human beings, these men and women. And so this amazing woman showed me around, introducing me to the people, and I must have distributed, because she helped me, close to 20 scarves. So not like a huge amount, but, you know, it takes about 4 or 5 hours to make each scarf. And so, you know, it was a lot of work put into them, but just seeing these people, I got to meet so many neat people. One man was 100 years old, and he was in World War II. I talked to a woman who was a nurse in Vietnam War. Just really amazing people. This one couple, they were married after all this time, shared a room together, which was amazing. And they were just so absolutely precious. Heroes, heroes, heroes. Thank you for your service. If you're listening and you are in the military, I don't care if it's Marines, it's Army, Navy, Air Force, whatever it is, thank you. From the bottom of my heart, thank you. Welcome to part 4 of the Movie Curses episode series. If you haven't listened to the others, I recommend doing so. They're all pretty interesting, and I learned a lot doing those episodes. I love those kind of episodes. So part 1 is episode 96, and that goes into detail about The Wizard of Oz, The Conqueror, and Poltergeist. Part 2 is episode 97, and featured are the movies The Crow, A Tuck, what would have been a movie anyways, and The Exorcist. And that leaves us with the most recent, part 3, episode 139, where I talk about Rosemary's Baby, Rebel Without a Cause, and The Omen. Now today, you guys, we dig deep into part 4 with a whole brand new lineup of movies. Movies that dealt with their share of hardship, challenges, bumps in the road, obstacles, whatever you want to call it. Some don't believe in curses, and that is fine and dandy, but it's hard to ignore some of the things that went on during filming. Now, first up is the 1979 movie Apocalypse Now, a movie about Vietnam. that experienced more than just a couple of hiccups during production. The script for Apocalypse Now, it was declined by George Lucas. He was not interested, but Francis Ford Coppola, he saw potential. He had faith in this and did what George Lucas could or would not do. He said yes. According to CBR.com, he was the only one who had faith, really. Quote, even before the filming began, Coppola had such a large scope for the movie that he had to dip into his own pocket and put his house and everything he owned on the line. Rather than filming in a studio, the shoot was to take place entirely in the Philippines to make it as authentic as possible. And, as it was the era of limited CGI, a vast amount of soldiers, tanks, and helicopters had to be provided by the Philippine military. Huge sets had to be constructed over months, only for them to be blown up for a single take, with millions of dollars being spent on every major scene. Unquote. People associated with Apocalypse Now were told that filming would take about 5 months, if that, right? But it went much longer than expected, taking 14 months. Ouch, baby. Big ouch. Many challenges would pop up. One, no one had control over, as Mother Nature had the reins in her unforgiving hands, introducing a very angry typhoon to the area, known as Typhoon Olga. Like a toddler having a tantrum and destroying their new toy, Typhoon Olga had left a mess in her wake. Countless people had to be evacuated, many losing their homes. Over 1.3 million displaced. Her death toll rose close to 400 people and costed millions in damages. Olga caused what was considered the worst flooding the Philippines had experienced or seen in over 30 years. Another big-time ouch. The typhoon obviously put filming to a sudden halt, as most of the movie sets were completely destroyed due to Olga, delaying things even more for several weeks. There were some issues when it came to the staff as well, not just Mother Nature, you know? Now let's start with Marlon Brando. The late actor, and if anybody was a fan who's listening, no offense, but he was an absolute nightmare. Brando insisted on only staying 3 weeks. He demanded a ridiculously large sum of money, considering he only wanted to be there less than a freaking month. He refused to learn any of his lines. Like, how do you get movies, you know? Yeah, that's kind of like a thing. You gotta learn your lines. And to make matters worse, his character was supposed to be a lean, fit, healthy-looking military dude, right? And Marlon Brando arrived and was anything but. He had grown extremely obese. Like, you know how there's people who really do their part for a role? Like, most recently, a good example is David Harbour from Stranger Things, right? I mean, he was never a big guy, but he lost, if I remember correctly, it was like 70-ish pounds, if not more, for the season of Stranger Things when he was imprisoned. Fighting the Demogorgons, the Demodogs, you know? I mean, you gotta do it. And so, I mean, you just gotta do what you gotta do for the role. Marlon Brando was like, screw that, I could care less. His whole attitude, Brando, was pretty sour during this whole thing, and I am unsure why they dealt with him for as long as they did, when they could have probably found somebody better who was willing to cooperate much more. Now, Marlon Brando, he was not the only actor to be a nightmare during the production of Apocalypse Now. Enter late actor Dennis Hopper. Let's just say Hopper was an abuser of sorts when it came to substances, and would go on to get a very young, at the time, actor, Lawrence Fishburne, addicted to heroin. Any guesses, ladies and gentlemen, how old Lawrence was at the time this all took place? Dun, 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 dun. He was 14 years old. That's heartbreaking, in my opinion. I mean, poor kid. He would lie about his age, Lawrence, so he could be in this movie. I'm sure he didn't think that becoming addicted to a deadly drug would be part of that experience, but here we were. Martin Sheen, who at the time of filming was only 36 years old, he suffers a heart attack while filming. After this near-death experience, Sheen takes a break from filming, and understandably so. After the scary attack on his heart, Sheen is immediately taken to the hospital. Now, it's unsure if he's going to live to see another day, and the fate of not only the man, but the movie itself were in murky waters. The future? Well, it was uncertain. He would remain hospitalized for several weeks, but he would eventually recover, and filming, it did continue on. Francis Ford Coppola would have a near nervous breakdown, and who can blame him? Problems are erupting left, right, up, down, from troublemaker, rebel, rogue actor like Brando, and bad influence addict like Hopper. Not to mention that they went way, way over budget, like around $120 million over budget. Ouch! No doubt. Throw that Band-Aid on. I would have a nervous breakdown too. You know, not only dealing with all of that, yeah, just too much going on. ScreenRant.com shared an interesting fact. Quote, "When you're making a war movie, it's always a good idea to get the U.S. military on your side, because then they can lend out equipment that you can't get anywhere else to use as props. However, since Apocalypse Now revolved around the U.S. military ordering a captain to assassinate one of their own colonels, the real military wanted nothing to do with the film. Francis Ford Coppola and his crew instead had to borrow equipment from armed forces that were local to where they were shooting, in the Philippines." And that is very interesting. You know, it's, you see so many war movies and movies based on the military, and it just like makes you wonder how much of that is accurate and legit with the military equipment. I didn't even think that was a thing because it is military. I didn't think that they could just like lend stuff out like that, or did lend stuff out like that. So very interesting stuff for sure. BBC.com, they also go into detail discussing some of the issues that took place during production. Quote, "The harsh conditions were totally alien to most people there. The crew complained a lot about the heat, humidity, hotel rooms, bugs, mosquitoes, the mud, sometimes knee-deep was a real challenge. Damian Leak, who played a machine gunner in the film, was on set for 3 weeks and similarly remembers the physical as being unlike anything he had encountered. The first thing I remember is getting off the plane and the humidity hits you like a wet mop," he tells the BBC. "Having been from New York, I know humidity, but this was unbelievable. The water was not safe to drink. Geckos climbed the walls of the hut he stayed in, and the weather was biblical. Every day it would rain. It would rain like it was mad at you. It would rain sheets like I had never seen before." As the production dragged on, it became tough for the cast and crew, who started to miss life back home. They were pretty much like soldiers in Vietnam, who had never been further away from home than Canada, recalls Gerritsen. "There was a lot of homesickness. One member of the crew went nearly every weekend to Manila, a 3 to 4 hour trip each way over a bad road, and rented a hotel room overlooking the airport, just watching planes take off for the United States of America." Next up is the 1979 movie Stalker, a movie that was filmed by a chemical plant, mind you, close proximity to the Jõgala River in Estonia. This chemical plant was an absolutely horrific nightmare, leaking toxic, nasty shit into the ground and the river. The hyperhive.com goes into more details about this nightmarish location. The location had an abandoned hydroelectric station, but there was a problem. A chemical plant upstream was dumping toxic waste into the river. Crew members noticed strange things like white foam floating on the water and snow falling in summer. Some women on the crew even got allergic reactions on their faces, unquote. Now, the same article kind of talks about the first year of film and how it was completely destroyed when it was improperly developed. I mean, I cannot even imagine a whole entire year progress, hard work, how many man hours, just all gone, wasted. And it's not like they're filming, you know, in the Bahamas or in Hawaii or some, you know, beautiful mountain resort where it's like, okay, it's a pain in the ass, but guess what? I don't mind staying an extra year out here. No. This, after all they sacrificed being in this horrible location. I'm not saying Estonia is horrible. I've always wanted to actually go there, but I'm saying chemical plant, I don't care where you're at. You don't want to be near that shit. I just have been working so hard on working on my grandpa's book, right? And it's been over a year. I'm just trying to picture if all of that was just vanished, if it just all went away, all that hard work down the drain. Now, Stalker director Andrei Tarkovsky and his wife, Larissa, who was the assistant director for the movie, they both die from lung cancer. Lead actor for Stalker, Anatoly Solontin, he would also die from lung cancer. All were very rare forms of lung cancer. And it's believed the culprit was from the chemical plant. And the final cursed movie I'm going to talk about today is Fitzcarraldo. This 1982 film was considered one of Werner Herzog's finest, and possibly the most challenging in his impressive career, as he is still at it today. Werner, he liked challenges. Bring it on should be his motto, right? He had his crew, much to their dismay, may I add, manually haul a steamship, like a legit multiple-ton steamship, over 300 tons, actually, and he wanted them to haul it up an extremely steep hill. Many injuries happened because of that stunt. I mean, no shocker there. Many other crew members and cast would be injured during the filming of this movie. Several indigenous people to the area who were extras in the movie would die during filming. Now, I couldn't find names or a specific number or cause of deaths or really anything, so I'm unable to give more details on that, unfortunately. But what is known, well, human lives were lost, and that's very heartbreaking. So, like all other movies I have talked about throughout the movie Curse series, Fitzcarraldo ran into problems, some straight up terrifying. Not one, but two plane crashes occurred during filming. And while I did not see any casualties, thank God, many people were horribly injured, leaving one unfortunate soul paralyzed. One person was bitten by a venomous snake and would go on to amputate his own foot with a chainsaw so that the venom would not spread through his body. Now, while this sounds barbaric or brutal, it did in fact save his life. And that must have been a very hard call to do, but it seems like he did not hesitate. He was like, boom, done, call it a day. So Werner Herzog, he had befriended the Aquaruna tribe at the beginning. even hiring some of them as laborers and extras, but things quickly turn sour when a movie village set is constructed on their land. Land that they considered sacred, and this did not end well. Some of the locals found it appropriate to burn the set down to the ground. Now, nobody died. They made sure nobody was there when it happened, but this put a huge wrench, obviously, in filming, and they had to relocate and find another place to continue on. Now, Jason Robards, who was originally supposed to be in the movie, had to be replaced due to contracting
dysentery
during filming. Jason was not the only actor that had to be replaced. Mick Jagger was cast to portray Fitzcarraldo's assistant. But since filming went on much longer than was expected, he had to step down due to plans of touring with his band, the Rolling Stones. They unfortunately spent so much time doing scenes with Jagger, scenes that were ultimately cut out of the film itself, which really sucks. All that time, you know, wasted. But apparently, if you look on YouTube, I've heard that you can find a scene or two featuring the Rolling Stones singer. So pretty interesting stuff for sure. Then the main actor. Oh boy, if you thought Marlon Brando was bad, this next dude takes the cake. Enter Klaus Kinski. Klaus, he was a nightmare on set. He was not only confrontational with Werner, and they've worked in the past together and created some pretty amazing stuff in the past, but he was confrontational with Werner and also the staff and cast as well. He was pissing people off left and right. The tribal folk and chief even came to Herzog and offered to murder Klaus. Even though Werner despised Klaus, he politely declined the murderous offer. FarOutMagazine.com talks more about this and other road bumps they experienced along the way. Many of the indigenous extras hated the lead actor, Klaus Kinski, who was a nightmare to work with. He complained constantly and annoyed everyone, and his continual arguing with Herzog was so extreme that the leader of the tribe offered to kill Kinski. Herzog was in such a frenzied, obsessive state that his reservation seemed to be related to not being able to finish the film. Still, Kinski wasn't the original lead for the movie. Jason Robards had actually completed almost half of filming in the part of Brian Sweeney Fitzgerald, but he was stricken with dysentery and forced to quit. Herzog and Kinski's bizarre relationship really wasn't healthy for anyone to be around, and the team couldn't stand it. Everyone was stressed or injured, it seemed. Several people even died. A tribe member working on the film drowned, and another was stricken by a disease that killed him. A crew member was left paralyzed after a plane crash, and the cinematographer, Thomas Mach, injured his hand so badly that he was left to stitch it up without any form of pain relief. Unquote. Like, that's a lot going on right there, you know, from plane crashes to deaths to disease, issues where filming's going longer, so they're having to get rid of people and redo scenes, and I mean, that's just a nightmare, for sure. Now, accusations continue onward when it came to the director, and I quote ScreenRant.com again. Herzog is to blame for sparking an all-out war, as the director had hired close to 1,000 indigenous extras and treated them terribly. The 1,000 extras were housed in what could only be described as barracks. There wasn't enough food to go around, and one even died from malaria, which is one of the times members of the crew died on set. And this lasted for 6 months, causing a ton of friction, and this led to the camp being attacked by the Amahaka tribe. Unquote. Now, described in the same article is the horrible aftermath of the tribe attack, which goes into great detail about the casualties of the crew. A man he was shot at with a 5-foot arrow that went straight through his throat. But amazingly, the man somehow survived. His wife was also attacked and she survived several injuries as well, but nothing fatal, thankfully. Now, while in the Amazon in December of 1980, Werner penned this in his journal. "This morning I woke up to terror such as I have never experienced before. I was entirely stripped of feeling. Everything was gone. It was as if I had lost something that had been entrusted to me that previous evening. Something I was supposed to take special care of overnight. I was in the position of someone who has been assigned to guard an entire sleeping army, but suddenly finds himself mysteriously blinded, deaf, and defaced. And everything was gone. I was completely empty, without pain, without longing, without love, without warmth and friendship, without anger, without hate. Nothing. Nothing was there anymore, and I was left like a suit of armor with no knight inside. It took a long time before I even felt alarmed." Today, three movies were added to my movie curses lists: Apocalypse Now, Stalker, and Fitzcarraldo. Are these movies actually cursed, or were they just simply plagued with bad luck? I mean, it happens, right? Some would say yes, indeed, it was cursed, while others may scoff. Pfft, whatever. To each their own, that's what I always say.
And that concludes another fantastic podcast. Legend has it, if you don't tune in, I'll be returning to haunt you. So make sure to tune in for the next episode.
Did you enjoy this week's episode? Listen to the others, they're all spooktacular. Haven't heard every single one yet? No need to fret, worry, or lose sleep over it. Simply hit up any of those podcast platforms such as Spotify, iTunes, CastBox, Downcast, Pocket Cast, Podcast Republic, Deezer. Basically, wherever you may roam to hear your other spooky podcasts, you'll probably find Paranormal Prowlers Podcast lurking in the background. Thanks, everyone, and
I will see you next week.